much tech can we cram into our cars? Under the hood, all those sensors, self-driving cars. Can flying cars be far behind? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with the host of a new show called The Flying Car. It's all things car tech, and it starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening. The pace of change in the automotive market used to be rather sluggish. For instance, seatbelts came pretty late to the game, especially shoulder straps, and Mercedes-Benz famously resisted cup holders for the longest time. But now, with digital technology and computing power so advanced, these once lumbering auto companies are in a sprint into the future. Semi-autonomous driving, monthly subscription car services, mandatory driverless cars in dense urban areas could come. Trucking efficiencies.
The blood flow is commerce coming through the towns, whether it's in vehicles for passengers or for commerce or, you know, deliveries and things like that. If there's a bunch of backup on the Bay Bridge, you know, it's inconvenient for you and I getting to work, but think of all the trucks that are making deliveries and thinking of all the businesses that rely.
Every day when I drive home down Battery Street.
Well, there you go. But I'm just saying, so obviously there's another aspect in the development. There's you and I and convenience and mobility, but there's also, again, the circulation of a city, that what keeping it alive, and how can we move things around and through the cities.
Coming up now is the start of a conversation and of a new show and podcast that we hope continues for a long while. He's an expert in all things automotive, from in-cabin technology to what's under the hood to what's coming next. Here we go.
Charlie Vogelheim. I am the host and creator of the Flying Car podcast.
Charlie, thanks for coming in today. Let's start with NVIDIA.
So every year, the NVIDIA has a gathering. They call it the GTC, which is the GPU Technical Conference, and they bring in everyone that's using this GPU systems for whatever industries that they're in, and they come together. 8,500 people show up, and this event is at the San Jose Convention Center. They take over all of the hotels in the area. A big gathering that night, either at the Tech Museum or, in this case, at the Convention Center. And it's interesting because there's two major divisions in utilizing the GPU chips, and it's healthcare, which is a big part of artificial intelligence or machine learning, mm-hmm. and then automotive or transportation generally, in terms of what is the autonomous car or robot car, whatever right. you want to call it, going to be. And the GPU, the NVIDIA GPU, is a big part of the brain behind that. And they've made a platform that enables developers of autonomous transportation to utilize the GPU and even some software behind it.
Yeah, NVIDIA is one of the big players right now as far as the hardware-software angle goes, right?
Yeah, it's really a huge player. And, you know, GPU, for many years ago, when any of us were ordering a PC or a tower or even a laptop, it's like, oh, do you want to upgrade your GPU chip? And it's like, you know, that was all about the graphics and for right. gaming and things like that, because it enables a lot of overlapping or parallel computation, and they can do things a lot that were specific, again, for the graphic interfaces and the presentation.
Charismatic CEO, momentum stock.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I'm still bullish on NVIDIA, but we've had a bit of a bumpy road.
If we saw the Moore's Law trajectory on chips, we saw it starting to kind of reach apogee a little bit, starting to curve back. But right. then if we overlap the development of the GPU and the utilization of that, it almost continues that trajectory on what its original course was. So there we're starting to see things. We're starting to see NVIDIA make inroads. Our good friends at Intel down the road are all of a sudden raising their hands going, wait a second, you know, there's advantages to chips versus GPUs in terms of heat and energy utilization. And the whole thing about any of this is you've got to build it with the rigors that it's going to be able to sustain its capabilities in a car, with, you know, high heat, low temperatures, vibration, and everything that goes on that.
Let's talk about the hardware that goes into that you just discussed that has to have such rigor, has to be able to sustain and maintain during all these different situations from northern Minnesota to Southern California. But it's really not a big piece of equipment, is it?
No, it really isn't. And, you know, it's about this real estate of an iPad, so to speak, and, you know, maybe a little bit thicker. But what you're accomplishing here, and the key word is sensor fusion. So what makes autonomous driving and everything really work right now, we're kind of at a tipping point in terms of computation ability, and then sensor fusion is all of the different sensors, and I mean whether it's your camera or it's LiDAR, radar, all coming together, and that's what's really painting the picture of the motion of the car, the clarity of the lanes in front, what's going on in terms of traffic or people moving around, and being able to fuse that together to make proper decisioning on how the car is going to go forward is really what we've come together on now. And this is where we're going to see this as I say, a tipping point has been reached, and it's going to be quickly developed over time. So what NVIDIA has created is a workable platform that an OEM, a manufacturer, or even a developer, and whether here in the U.S. or around the world, wants to create this type of solution, they now have a computation platform that enables them to do that in a much quicker and competent way. And again, it's not only the hardware, but now, of course, NVIDIA, like IBM, like other developers, have the software behind, and they're quickly developing. And that's what this whole GTC conference, or the GPU conference is about, the GTC, is bringing together like-minded people, showing different utilizations of the GPU chips and what they're developing, from the car operating a certain way, or even a camera looking at your face trying to determine your attention or your cognitive abilities at the time as you're driving. It's amazing.
It is. It's mountains and mountains of data every second
that are coming in.
It's coming in from a camera, like you said, LiDAR, radar being funneled through, in this example, NVIDIA's chips and software. So what the hell happened in Phoenix?
Well, so now you've got a bunch of people developing things. Certainly most famous because of the early start here, Google. Mm-hmm. We saw those Lexus with what, you know, would be described as a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket on the top, which was an oversized LiDAR in the day. And now, of course, that's moved on to the brand of Waymo and developing on these much more attractive and streamlined-looking Chrysler minivans. Now, it's being run by John Kravchuk, former Hyundai, before that even Ford. He's, you know, again, running the program there, great guy. Before that was Chris Urmison. He moved on to Aurora, again, making a very competent product by most people. So there are several people that are doing things. And when I say people, I mean companies.
Sure. I think there's 30 that are licensed to test in California right now.
In California, right. But then there are others that are just developing for other reasons. Uber being one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, Uber, there's a business case there that, you know, the cost of the driver, if that can be accomplished with software and hardware. So they're testing on the streets. And I think we all agree, for the most part, you can simulate a lot of things going on, but you really want to do some actual testing on the street. Unfortunately, it was an Uber vehicle that ran into and over a pedestrian and caused a fatality. Now, my first reaction to something like that is, okay, we didn't start with zero fatalities. Right now, there's nearly 40,000 people killed a year. In the United States, over 90 to 95% causes the driver.
Everyone is a tragedy, but at the same time,
terrible.
Needed for context.
Right. And we're never going to really go to zero. I mean, you'd have to outlaw motorcycles to do that for the most part. But we're going to want to reduce that. Unfortunately, there's going to be accidents. Now, this particular one, I'm at the National Auto Dealers Association convention. John Kravchuk is a speaker there on behalf of Waymo, and is asked point blank. So if that was your vehicle with what you've seen, and of course, tapes have been released. We've seen how far out we saw the pedestrian. And I'm expecting kind of a, I don't know, a careful answer that says, you know, we're all trying to learn and things like that. And he just, you know, point blank says, yeah, we would have avoided it. We would not have hit that person. It's like, whoa, okay, so now let's deconstruct this. And, of course, there's a little bit of a battle going between Waymo and Uber when, you know, we've seen that with the data that was, you know, taken from one to the other, allegedly.
Interesting lawsuit.
It's been settled, so,
Cross-ownership, though, I think there's a deeper story. We'll go into another time there.
Exactly. So now, all of a sudden, we're trying to deconstruct it, and this is happening while we're at NVIDIA, and we're seeing other utilization. I'm giving moderating a presentation from an MIT study that's trying to, you know, show whether the driver's paying attention or not. They've got the video from the accident as an example, and they're showing the driver not looking out the window for, you know, nearly 6 seconds prior to the impact. Now, he was very careful to say, I don't know what the role of that driver was. And that's what we all need to understand. There are safety drivers as this is being developed, but some of them are looking out the window, or they're looking at a video representation, or they're doing tasks in the car to make sure things are operating correctly. This was tragic, and it, by many people's count, shouldn't have happened. And there, well, we will learn more about it over time, whether all of the sensors were in play, what was the role of the safety driver and everything. But a couple manufacturers have already stood out and said, we wouldn't have done this. And again, in Waymo's, to give them credit, literally millions of miles on the road.
Yes, driven. Right. Yeah, and this may be a dry hole of a follow-up question, but it's my understanding the pedestrian may have been outside of the crosswalk, the painted crosswalk. Would that make a effect?
No. Yeah. Well, let me say yes, and to the extent that it may not have been a safe situation, but the reality is the autonomous car doesn't know what a crosswalk is or not. I mean, they're looking ahead for obstacles. So being in a crosswalk, they're not all of a sudden paying more attention.
Right.
And again, that's the beauty of the autonomous vehicle or development is all of the sensors are paying attention all of the time. in theory.
Right.
So you and I are getting distracted. You know, we want to turn up the volume to hear the sweet sound of your voice, you know, as we're driving down the road. And we have to look away for that moment in time. The sensors are theoretically never looking away.
Right.
So where that occurred isn't as important. I mean, it certainly comes out right away. And your question, did they dart out in front of the car and something like that?
I think, again, for context, too, I mean, we're here at Battery and Broadway in San Francisco. And last year, I called 911 because I saw a woman get hit who was in the crosswalk by a human driver.
Yeah.
So it does happen. I think what's going on here is something more social, right?
Right.
Like, we're just getting our heads around the idea of a human backup. I mean, really? We've always been human-centric as people, you know, and our economy is built on that, too. So I think we have a – it's not just about the miles that are tested, I don't think. I think it has to be comfort level with what's happening, and I think the context really is important.
It is, and again, we all want to feel safe, and even as I say, unfortunately, there will be accidents and there will be injuries and possible death. You know, psychology will tell us that we are more comfortable being hurt or injured by another human than by a machine. So all of a sudden, but now, if I go back to the earlier terms that we use, machine learning leading towards artificial intelligence, and of course, we're not there fully yet, theoretically, done right, this industry, as it grows, every other autonomous vehicle learns from what happened in Phoenix, and it's not in vain to the continued development of everyone else. And now that's happening within companies. It's not so obvious that it's going to be shared outside of companies at this point. But again, Waymo will tell you that every time it's driving and any time there's ever an incident or something it doesn't fully understand, when it understands it, every Waymo vehicle from that moment on understands it.
Right,
so it's not an individual car or like you and I mean, you know, you drive, you grow up in a snowy area. I grew up in a sunny area. And then all of a sudden you're learning how to drive on ice. How great would it be, almost like the Matrix, that you plug in and you say, okay, I can learn how to drive on ice because you learned how to drive on ice.
Right. That's a good perspective. And it's very forward looking. Let's pull back, though. So what are you seeing within the industry itself?
Yeah. And one other thing that happened in our own neighborhood here in the Bay Area, I should say, is a Tesla. There was a fatality involved in that. And, you know, again, deconstructing, was it on autopilot or what form of autonomous or just inattentive? Unfortunately, something happens to any one of these companies, which are Bay Area companies. And I mean, Tesla or Uber, and all of a sudden, all the flags go up, and what does this all mean?
Well, it's a sexy stock, it's a sexy company, sexy headlines.
And
I mean,
local,
it's a Tesla,
and
we have video of it.
Exactly.
Of course, that doesn't help either.
Well, and again, that's a part of the deconstruction, because for the most part, it's proprietary video or proprietary information, and now the question is, does it become generalized, or can we all share that? Four things are going to be accomplished with this autonomous, theoretically, is obviously safety. So again, we're all for that. Nearly 40,000 people killed a year, as I mentioned, and if we can get away from that, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Mobility is a big benefit, and I mean that both for the disabled, think of anybody blind, and then, of course, some people with physical disabilities may or may not be able to drive on their own. All of a sudden, they become mobile. And then as we all age, again, mobility to the people that shouldn't be driving anymore because their cognitive abilities have started to wane with age. So that's all positive. Congestion is certainly something that maybe or maybe not. They've shown where on highways or in fast-moving situations that autonomous vehicles will get through the area quicker because they're not slowing down. They're not stopping to look and things like that. So whether we got a chance to experience that at CES. So we're in an autonomous vehicle going down Las Vegas Boulevard, and one of those big tour buses pulls to the side. The car doesn't even hesitate and just goes buzzing past it. Those of us in the car got a little bit, like, you know, startled. But theoretically, if the autonomous vehicle knows exactly how wide the car is in feet or meters and knows how big the space is, there's no reason to slow down. It just goes where you and I kind of go, am I going to fit? Do I fit through this? Am I going off the lane?
For sure.
And we're all a little tentative. So theoretically, again, more efficiency on the road will be accomplished by all of that. It's going to be in fits and starts, and I hate it when something like this happens in Phoenix that it's like, oh my gosh, don't do this something that's avoidable. Because, again, we have this regulatory overlord in terms of the U.S. government and then the individual states.
Right.
And, again, they're for our protection. It's so interesting that the Northeast is all about the consumers going, we don't want these cars in our state. We want to protect our citizenry. And other states, Nevada might be one, others that just say, hey, come out here. But we certainly know there's other countries that are going
But Charlie, look, they're testing in Phoenix because there's barely any regulation there.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But now, there is now.
yeah, that's true.
they're not quite as welcome.
Right.
But to that extent, and any of these cities and the municipalities, hey, this is part of the heartbeat of the city. This is the blood flow is commerce coming through the towns, whether it's in vehicles for passengers or for commerce or, you know, deliveries and things like that. if there's a bunch of backup on the Bay Bridge, you know, it's inconvenient for you and I getting to work. But think of all the trucks that are making deliveries and thinking of all the businesses that rely.
Every day when I drive home down Battery Street.
Well, there you go. But I'm just saying, so obviously there's another aspect in the development. There's you and I and convenience and mobility, but there's also, again, the circulation of a city, that what keeping it alive and how can we move things around and through the city. So that said, the development of a lot of this will happen in commerce first, whether it's trucking companies, okay. You know, and you think about California, Los Angeles to San Francisco, I-5. Boy, if the trucks could be moving without taking up the driver's time, because again, for safety, they have to have certain rest times, which, you know, benefits all of us. And then in terms of local deliveries, is that something where it maybe not taking the place of the driver, but making the driver more efficient is going to be the first step. So in other words, we can get more deliveries done in the same period with the same person managing all of that.
Right.
And then we'll get into the possibility of some of these shared rides, whether it's an Uber, Lyft, kind of autonomous type situation, and maybe we're going to have to start with geofencing a geographic area in a municipality, whether it's downtown San Francisco or Manhattan. And we may even get to the point where you have to have an autonomous car to be driving in that. And, you know, we've already seen some things in Market Street in San Francisco where a real restriction on just the private cars going up and down the road there. So there will be a transition in mobility that we'll see going on. And we see these short-term call-up buses like Chariot and things like that happening. So all of that will start to play. And we're already seeing some of the autonomous vehicles in controlled environments like campuses, whether it's a college campus or an office complex or even a retirement community, where these buses can be moving around and don't necessarily require a driver's intervention. And they're not going that fast. I mean, at or below 25 miles an hour, theoretically, the vehicle should be able to stop, should be able to see far enough ahead that it can stop. And then, on a highway, it's a less complex. It's that in-between that is so very complex between 25 and 60 miles an hour and cross streets and pedestrians and cyclists and so that's where it really gets confusing and complex, and we'll start seeing how that happens.
Those mountains of data, we're back to that data.
Right.
Yeah. Those are cool use cases I had not thought about, like retirement homes and college campuses. You've got to catch a flight, and I'm running a little short on time. Let me ask you one quick question, though. Are we going to own cars in 20 years?
Well, that's a great question that maybe we aren't, and it will depend where you live. So if you're in an urban area, I mean, San Francisco, great experiment for all of that. Not necessarily if you're doing anything locally, but there's, you know, you've got these wonderful roads to the north and to the south, you're going to Monterey or up to the Napa Valley. You know, maybe it's going to be transportation as a subscription. So you're going to be part of a monthly payment, and you can, you know, get that car to take out on the weekend or something like that.
I saw an ad when I was watching television last night for a monthly subscription to Volvo.
Yeah, so Volvo started, Porsche started one, Cadillac has one.
Okay.
They're starting in different markets. BMW starting one in Nashville, and it's just a subscription service. Now, that's just you making a monthly payment, and then you get the vehicle as you roll around. We could take it another level that says, I don't want the car parked at my house, but I want access to it.
Okay.
And therefore, maybe I only need it on weekends or on an occasional weeknight or something like that. And that takes it to the next level. But we're walking in that direction.
It seems like if I wanted to keep my Alpha in my, as a vanity project, right, I could keep that and then have a monthly subscription for my daily back and forth.
Let me just say, if you have an Alpha, it's an ongoing project.
It sure is. It sure is. You have to be dedicated to the pain of having an Alpha. Charlie, thanks a lot for coming in. This has been a lot of fun. Let's do it again soon.
I look forward to it.
That was the host of The Flying Car, Charlie Vogelheim. For links to Charlie's podcast, publications, and other contact points, please check the show notes for this week. They live at KGORadio.com. You can also find us at Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. That's where we also post the show story and the music we choose each week. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at KGOJason. And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked the stories we chose as much as we liked putting them together. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and the writer Jason Middleton. Thanks for listening, and have great weeks, everybody.